This is the audio recording of the interview with Harry Cooper, the lead developer of Pitch Black, A Dusklight Story. This will run about 40 minutes long, and we get into a whole bunch of nitty-gritty game topics about the mechanics, the storyline, some of the challenges people will face, some of the different puzzles that will be in the game. We stay away from spoilers, but we do cover, you know, maps, all kinds of stuff that we can cover, just so everyone has a more well-rounded picture in their head and better expectations for what the game will be when it is released next year. If you would like to support them on Kickstarter, you will find a link at the top of the blog post here. It'll take you right to their Kickstarter page. You can sign up for one of the tiers if you so wish. There's a whole bunch to choose from. If you are not able to sign up, then just share it on Twitter. Share it on somewhere else, on Facebook, on Reddit, wherever all the cool kids hang out. Go share it there for all the cool kids to see. There may be a giveaway with this. Look down on the blog post and see if there's a heading labeled giveaway. If so, there will be a click to tweet. You'll be able to tweet it out, and in doing so, you will be entered into the giveaway to win a copy of the game when it's released. That's all to say in this intro. We're going to get into the interview. I hope you enjoy. I wanted to start this off by having you tell me and everyone listening your elevator pitch for your game, Pitch Black, mainly so we know everyone is on the same page with knowing what the game is, and then we can actually get into the meat and potatoes of the interview.
Sure, so Pitch Black is a narrative-driven 3D audio game, or binaural audio game if you prefer, featuring explorable sound worlds and a complex storyline. The exploration is done using audio mechanics, which are based on psychoacoustic principles, which is sort of a combination of how the brain interprets acoustics in a room. And the main goal with it is to create an audio game that has a scope larger than that which has gone before it.
There's three of you guys working on the project. We got yourself, Harry Cooper, Jordan Berry, who's doing sound design, and Connor Harrison, who's doing all the character development. How did you guys actually get together? Was it originally in college, I believe, or did you guys meet after college?
Yeah, so we met up at the start of university. We're all on the same master's course, studying an MA in music production. And that was in October of last year. Found out we had very similar interests and became fast friends. And then around December, January time, I was getting very interested in spatial audio and ambisonics, and then how to make that accessible to a larger audience, which is binaural, essentially. And then around February time, I started developing a bit of the game. It was originally going to be an audio-based puzzle game, and I wanted a bit of help with the narrative. And Connor's degree, first undergraduate degree, is in creative writing in English, so I got speaking to him. And then we started getting on really well, started developing this whole backstory, and that was very exciting. And then after that, I needed a bit of help with how we were going to market the project. And Jordan has a bit of experience through music and through other things doing that, particularly social media marketing. And then he got involved with all the world building, and he's also a great sound designer. He's done lots of things. So yeah, we just started working together from there, really, and it sort of picked up steam to the point where we've had a couple of investors and lots of interest. So it's been great, quite the journey.
Now, how did you guys get from spatial music and ambisonic, and I'm not going to even try to say that word, spatial music, 3D music, how did you actually get from that into an audio game? Because, I mean, they are very loosely related, because they're obviously going to be based highly on audio placement and immersion, but what was that road like getting from music into a fully voice-acted binaural audio game?
So what it stemmed from was I was very interested in creating these explorable binaural spaces, and I was using Unity to explore how that might affect music composition, essentially. And that, from then, I started to think, well, how can I apply these sort of ideas of directing people using sound through a landscape or a soundscape that is only sound? How can you attract a listener's attention in a certain direction? And from there, it sort of said, oh, okay, great. What possibilities are there to make this an interactive environment? And when you make something interactive, it sort of becomes less musical and more in the gaming realm. And I was like, okay, I quite like puzzles. How do we incorporate those with sound? And then from then you get gameplay and difficulty ramping. And I thought, okay, well, how am I going to frame these puzzles? And from there you get storyline and so on and so forth. The world is actually loosely based on I did a project about 5 years ago. It's actually on Kickstarter still, which was a concept, well, a multimedia release. So there was an album, a book, and lots of artwork to go along with it. And that was set in this fictional world that had a fictional story called Dusklight. So that's sort of where the name came from. And actually the big driver in the story was in that world was access to light, because we're in this post-apocalyptic landscape wherein the government, which is formerly an energy company, mm-hmm. Has complete control over who can access energy. And so at nighttime, if you have no money, there are no lights anywhere. And that started playing in very well to this idea of having an audio game, because that sort of lays out the premise of why there's no visuals. It's mm-hmm. set in the night. Yeah, so that's how the world and the idea sort of developed. Obviously, it's not just me. As soon as the guys came on board, we met a lot at Weatherspoons, which is a well-known pub chain, sort of every week, every 2 weeks, to really flesh out the idea of what the game was going to be. And then we started making it.
So it was just essentially starting with a seed and then building on it until you get to something that doesn't look anything like the original seed anymore, which is how a lot of things end up starting. Have any of you played? Well, okay. Do you have any experience with specifically audio games or the audio gaming world, or is anyone in your family blind, or did you come to this completely on your own?
The idea of the audio game I actually came to sort of as my own volition. As soon as I had the idea, I thought, okay, well, lots of other people will have had this idea.
Well, most people don't even know they exist. That's why I ask. Like, a lot of people, you say audio game and they don't even know what that is. So it's very rare to see someone come to it completely naturally.
Yeah, well that's... I mean, this is why it was so fascinating to me as well. What an underexplored way to be creative, because you can portray so much with sound, and what a great sort of fresh medium to try and make something in. So it's incredibly exciting to be working within this sort of not new genre, but very much there's a lot of room for growth within it.
Yeah. Have you played any of the 3D audio-based audio games that'll come out in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. So after doing a bit of research, I played A Blind Legend, which was made by a French company called Duino. Mm-hmm. I looked a lot into Three Monkeys Into the Abyss, which sadly didn't get past the Kickstarter phase, but that was a very interesting 3D audio project. And I watched Illegally Sighted actually did a playthrough of the beta the time, which is very, very good to watch. And then other than that, A Hero's Call I've been doing a lot of research into, based on a lot of recommendations from the blind.
They're pretty community. Much the Kickstarter to reality gold standard in the audio gaming world, because they actually made a really good game off Kickstarter.
Yeah, absolutely. Since sort of researching, we've done a lot of further research, so we're not mm-hmm. coming up without any knowledge. You know, it's important to have a background of...
Now, are you guys interested in developing more audio games after this, or is it going to be purely based on the success of this project?
Oh, I mean, we'd love to. It's this project has of course got to keep the game dev studio open, the company going.
Yeah.
So there needs to be a certain amount of financial success to make a sequel viable. But from a business perspective, we have a 5-year business plan that includes episodic releases following on, set in the world that this game is set in. We're definitely very forward looking, and as I say, it's something we're all massively passionate about. It's obviously a business because you have to put so much time into this, mm-hmm. but equally it's a creative project that we're pouring effort into because of that as much as the business side of things.
That's actually one of the things I was going to get into later too, so I'm going to go ahead and jump on ahead to the actual, I don't know, game specifics. So everyone listening will get a better idea of what to actually expect when you're going to pick up the game and play it. Mm-hmm. The one thing I'm getting asked about, and I've had conversations with people about, we're kind of all wondering about, is what genre would you actually classify this game as?
So it's, we actually struggled to find a good, as you probably noticed, find a good way of summing it up. Which is why there's the tech demo, whilst it's still got lots of issues, is available so people can sort of have a go and get it, you know. I think the best way to describe it is if you imagine you're a person, the lead character, you play an infiltrator who's aligned with the rebels in the game, which is called the Nightlanders. and you're trying to infiltrate and find out the secrets that the powers that be are keeping from the general populace. And that's who you play as, and you do that. The actual gameplay involves using the audio mechanics to navigate around a 3D space. And the audio mechanics are there to, one, aid navigation, but two, to give super auditory powers to the player. So you can zoom in on sounds, you can investigate sounds, you can leave your own audio markers around the map so that you can create a cognitive map of where you've been. You have a sonar mechanic that tells you how far away you are from walls. And as regards the actual control scheme, we're looking at controller support. At the minute in the demo, it's arrow keys, so front and backwards moves the character front and backwards, with right and left turning them right and left.
Mm-hmm.
And the likewise applies to WASD. And if you'd prefer, you can also use the mouse to look around rather than A and D,
like
which, yeah, it's funny because most, well, from our research, the majority of blind game players don't use the mouse. Mm-hmm. But then we also had a couple of people who play more traditionally controlled FPSs, and they really like using the mouse. So I thought if we do both, then everyone's happy, you know?
There is an FPS called Swamp that it requires mouse. It's the only FPS, true FPS we have. And a lot of people are still very hesitant, or they'll just straight up reject using a mouse in an audio game, which doesn't make much sense.
I think if you don't use it in your day-to-day use,
yeah,
I think the idea of looking around using it then becomes a bit of a hurdle to get over for it to be intuitive. But as I say, it's there if people want to do
That's always good. So the game is going to be mainly story-driven, where you're going to be walking around and immersing yourself in the story of the world, and I assume trying to solve some sort of mystery. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, absolutely. So not to give too much away.
Yeah, no spoilers.
no spoilers. But a lot of the drivers, so a lot of the, other than using sort of evolutionary biases to direct attention in a certain direction, a lot of the drivers will be, you could call them semantic based. So you'll be have a lead character talking to you. So it might be Finn, who's the leader of the rebel group sort of thing. So he'll say something along the lines of, you know, can you go and investigate this? But it won't be obvious. It won't be so cut and dry. So, for example, in the city level, not in the current demo, but in the level design, he'll say, I've got a contact for you to go and meet. He's situated at this pub called the Best Bar None. There's always a busker outside there singing a song about this. And so it won't directly say, go north, and then you have a thing which tells you where north is.
Mm-hmm.
Require the player to do some investigation and to explore until they get that cue of, oh, just heard a busker over there. Let's navigate in that direction. And along the way, lots of interactable spaces and market sellers trying to sell you things. You can go experience other binaural audio simulations where we're making audio versions of classic arcade games to be in the city. So you can go and play a little mini game of audio Pong, for instance. So it's story driven in that characters in the game will give you a lot of the cues as to where you're supposed to be going. And also it's designed that if you go off the beaten track, there will be stuff there. It's not a completely linear experience.
Okay, so the basis of a lot of games is the developers putting in specific challenges to give the players of the game. Is this game going to be based on strictly challenges of finding locations in the city, as you said, or are there going to be other puzzles and other things like that they're going to have to be completed to finish the game?
So there'll be other puzzles. One thing that we're developing at the moment is there's a term called audio occlusion. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
No.
Occlusion essentially means when there's an object in the way of an audio source, that audio source is either completely blocked, so you can't hear it, or depending on the material, it's somewhat blocked. So if you're stood behind a concrete wall, for instance, and there's a sound on the other side, you won't hear any of the source coming through that concrete wall because the concrete's very dense, doesn't allow the sound wave to come through.
Mm-hmm.
If there's just a bit of fabric, maybe a thick duvet or something, it will attenuate some of the high frequencies and it will make the sound quite muffled. So an occlusion puzzle then would be as you're moving through through a space, you've got an audio source, say at one end of a quite a wide hall, and then you have a number of blocking walls. And as you move from side to side, you can tell where the wall ends because the audio source then becomes less occluded, less muffled. Mm-hmm. And so that allows for some puzzling elements where you start off with just one wall and you have to move around it. Then you get layers, and you can actually generate those procedurally through randomization of where those walls are placed. So that's in the game, and that kind of presents a bit of replay value as well. Mm-hmm. Another example of a mechanic we're implementing is we have a sewer level that's sort of the horror level of the game, and there are ghouls, which are these scary things. And the mechanic in that one is rather than going towards a certain sound, you have to run away from said sound to get through the level. Directing the player using fear rather than, I want to find this.
Because a lot of issues we see in audio games, I'm not saying you're going to do this, but a lot of new developers, is the games end up being overly simplified.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a big issue. Like, we do, a lot of blind gamers crave the challenge. Some aren't good at games and they like the really simple games, but I was just wondering if there is going to be the equal balance of progression from easier challenges to then harder challenges as we advance in the storyline of the game.
100%. And the way we're doing that as regards that, as I say, there are other mechanics, but as regards navigation, there are certain things which makes a sound much easier to localize. For instance, if it's a broadband sound, so it has lots of frequency information, lots of low sound, lots of high sound, lots of mid sound. Yeah. That's a lot easier for humans to navigate than if it's particularly just a low sound. If a sound is moving slightly, that also makes it easier to locate. If a sound is repeating rather than just being a constant sound, that makes it easier to locate. So you can make things more difficult or more simple by doing the opposite of those things, if you get me. Mm-hmm. And another thing you can do is, if you've got a very busy environment, that busy environment masks the audio source you're trying to go towards. Yeah. So if you're in a desert and there's just one sound and you've got to move towards it, that's very simple. And so you put that towards the start of the game. If you're in a building that's on fire and things are falling down, it's very difficult to know where things are because you've got so much input. And so that, you know, comes towards the end of the game.
So I think it just clicked in my head. A lot of times when we use the words audio game, we're describing pretty much a game, but that doesn't use visuals. Instead, that's replaced with audio. I feel like this game is more like a pure version of the name audio game, where it is a game purely based on audio, discerning audio cues, and then navigating in audio, more so than other games would be. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, as I say, the three of us on the team, we're all from an audio background. Audio is sort of, how to put it. I mean, my master's thesis was on auditory perception and how to put that in a virtual world.
That makes so very much sense now.
Everything stems from using sound as an information channel, as it's meant to be, rather than taking mechanics that work in visual cue-based games and sort of trying to swap them over. We have this amazing perceptual ability by having two ears, which gives us localization and how the brain interprets this massive information that's coming in. You know, let's use that to make something that is audio, not sort of a poor imitation of visual, which I'm not, obviously not all audio games are like that, but I feel like a lot of them have tried to translate rather than create from the ground up.
Yeah, it makes, I was having a hard time conceptualizing what the game would be, and now that the way you described it does make a lot more sense. I did have one more question. Is there going to be any form of inventory, character skills, anything like that in the game, or is it going to be strictly your character will stay the same as you advance through the entire storyline?
So there isn't going to be an inventory in a typical RPG sense. The way we're kind of giving player advancement is an increase in their mechanics, which I discussed before. So the auditory focus, that they'll be able to use those more often. It will have a greater range so that the character will be more powerful and also get introduced to new mechanics as the game progresses. But there isn't going to be an inventory.
Yeah.
As such. And part of that reasoning was that a lot of audio games use the screen reader voice, or they have text up and it gets read out by screen reader. What we're really trying to achieve is a great sense of immersion within this sound world, as you get when you shut your eyes and listen to a great piece of music or listen to a binaural soundscape. And the computer style voice really detracts from that, in my experience. So we didn't want to do an inventory type thing, because then you have to use those sort of voices. Whereas with our approach, all of the voice acting can be done as a character within the game. And that feels just much more intrinsically immersive, I suppose.
Yeah. So I know the answer, but I'm going to make sure, just so everyone knows, this isn't going to be your standard move around RPG. You already said that, but combat is not going to be a main aspect of this game or in it.
No.
Okay.
Not in this one. We're sort of considering in the sequel addressing combat, but that's a huge thing in itself. Yeah. How do you intuitively combat in an audio game? So we wanted to firmly establish the navigational sort of tools within this game and make sure those are intuitive and they're fun and the sound quality is appropriately good for what we're going for, and then tackle audio perhaps in the sequel. Not audio. Combat.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure, because I've had people ask me about that, and that way there's the answer. I already figured that out from your FAQ, but yes, that makes perfect sense. All right, I wanted to move on. These ones probably won't be as in-depth. They're much easier questions to answer, but you mentioned the iOS or mobile version of the game. Will that be completely separate, or will it be the exact same game only on mobile?
It'll be more or less the same game. There may be some limitations as regards the quality of the spatialization.
Yeah.
Because to make something third order binaural, which means you're essentially taking one audio source and you're making a 16 channel audio source. So it's 16 times as intensive to spatialize that one sound than it is to just have a sort of mono source in game. And so because of the natural limitations of processing and mainly RAM as well for storing audio as it's playing, there may be some restrictions there. But the storyline will be just as long, for instance, and all of the main voice acting will be in and all that sort.
Will someone be able to play on their PC and then pick up where they left off on their phone, or will it be a completely separate game from what you have on the PC?
We don't have plans for that. Some people have asked for that.
Yeah.
That is very doable, but it requires considerable work. That's not an easy thing to put in.
Yeah.
So what it really depends on is essentially what the scope of the Kickstarter success allows us to do.
Mm-hmm.
If we all of a sudden get a big boost and perhaps double our goal or something like that, then we can look at those sort of features, which do take a lot more work.
Yeah. And it also may not matter, depending on, because we're going to get into replayability here in a minute. And then it might not even matter because you'll be able to play both times. One thing that's confused me that I wanted to get out of the way. I've heard two things about the character. I think you touched on this earlier when you talked about light being controlled. And if you don't have light at dark, you're essentially functionally blind. But I've heard two points: that you had to drink something every day to stop from going blind and turning into some sort of monster.
Yes.
And then also everyone was blind. So I didn't know which one it was in the storyline.
It's hard to, without spoilers, the general populace have to drink something which is given out by the religion in game every day. And that is a means of control of the population.
I see.
Religion. That's the mm-hmm. reason for that. Now, the character that you play doesn't do that every day. Because he's part of a rebel group who deliberately abstained from drinking that. But because of that, he's a blind character.
I see. Now that makes sense. Yeah, because I ran across both versions and I didn't know which one it actually was. Okay. So what part of the game would you say you're focusing on the most? Would it be the audio, character development, the world, the storyline? What would you say would be... I wouldn't say what you're spending the most time on, because everything takes a lot of time, but what would you say is the largest focus in creating this?
I would say that because there isn't so much of an established way to do an audio game, at least in the way in which we're doing it, the initial focus was certainly on making sure that navigation worked, the audio mechanics were intuitive. So leading up to now, we've done a lot of play testing with blind and visually impaired players as well as sighted players to get their input on whether or not the controls make sense, whether or not they know how to use the mechanics and that sort of thing. But I wouldn't downplay the narrative aspects because it's a fully voice-acted game. One of our initial sort of sources of building a community was the big range of voice actors who all contributed lines for the market sellers within the city. It sounds like a job interview answer to say, we don't have any episodes, right? but initially audio, and then I suppose now world building and storyline, but they've all sort of grown in tandem with each other.
What would you say is the most difficult part so far? Because for me, when I hear it all, I think that writing the script and then dealing with all the voice actors would have to be a pain. But I don't know, because I'd like to talk about this and then maybe we can get into replayability after that. But can you talk about how much of a challenge it is to organize such a large project? Because there's a lot of voice acting, even in the tech demo. It has to be a challenge.
Yeah, well, to be fair, that's been Connor's job.
That's true. But you have to have an idea of how hard it is. I mean, you guys talked about how you had to do all the cocaine in one of your YouTube videos. So, I mean, that has to be from all the stress.
he's complained about it a lot, that's for sure. but it's honestly, people have been so willing to help out. It's been quite hard to manage because, one, we've only got one person doing it, and that's Connor. I think we're at just over 80 voice actors now. Not main voice actors, but people who have contributed lines for world building and that sort of thing. So that's a lot of people to manage. That's a lot of people to make sure you credit appropriately because we want to make sure that everyone feels valuable, you know. So it's, that sort of thing is very important. And also there's a sense of, because we're a small company, people who have contributed one or two lines of dialogue, for instance, we can't pay for that, as you can probably understand. Mm-hmm. So it's the big thing of we want to make sure that they get some value out of contributing to this. So it's making sure that everyone can be heard when people play the game, even if they're sort of a small role. And so that's the difficult bit to manage, I suppose.
I've heard you guys talk about three different maps. We have the desert, sewer, and then obviously the city. But I was wondering how many more maps there are, if there are any, and how much development is going into that map building. I'm a sucker for map building, so I feel obligated to ask this.
So there are six main levels in game, but within that you sort of have microcosms of different soundscapes. So for example, in what you might call the desert level, you start off in a concrete bunker, you then move out into the desert, you then come across a big factory which is breaking down. So there are multiple soundscapes within each one. Within the city, there's lots of bars you can enter. There's a cathedral level after that, which has, you know, the big open vast resonant space. Mm-hmm. And then spaces nearby the pews, and sort of so on and so forth. So there's a mansion level that sort of gets a bit psychedelic and pretty weird. There's an eco plant, which is this sort of Eden space where you're in this big sort of forested area and there's birds flying overhead, and all that sort of thing. So there's a large array of soundscapes within the game.
That was way more than I thought there was going to be. That's actually really good to know. I thought we were only going to have a very basic desert city and then sewer, because everything has to have a city and a sewer and then just throw in a desert. But I'm liking the fact that there's going to be a lot more in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, a big part of choosing those was what's sonically interesting and sonically diverse. I mean, if you've ever been in a cathedral, those things sound great, right?
So
one of those, and then the sounds of being a jungle thing with the birds and that's sort of a typically very nice soundscape. And the city where it's all bustling. So so we've picked the auditorily engaging spaces.
I wanted to get into the replayability because that's obviously a big factor in all offline single-player games. And it's kind of a two-parter. First, I wanted to ask, for someone who's just picking up the game, never played it before, you know, an average player, how long would you say it would take them to complete the storyline?
5 to 6 hours is our goal for the narrative. Obviously, that's not a speed run through.
Okay. That's what I was wondering when I saw that number before. Was if that was your guys' time because you know stuff, or if that was what you were estimating for the actual player picking it up?
Estimating for the actual player.
Okay.
Within that, we expect the player to do some exploration, you know, get a little bit lost, not in a frustrating way, but in a challenging way. We are actually developing alongside the playable game. We're developing an audiobook version, which is sort of just the storyline as if you were doing a perfect run through of the.
I see.
So it's a binaural audiobook in a way.
And you can get that on included with quite a bit of the tiers on Kickstarter, correct?
Yeah. I think it's the £30
one. You guys have so many tiers, I can't remember them all. But there are a lot of options for anyone. Any amount you can help with, there's a tier for you. I promise. They're all there.
Yeah.
Now, what are you guys doing to ensure there's some level of replayability in the game? Because 5 to 6 hours could be not a lot for a lot of people without the ability to replay the game and have some other replay value in it. So what are you guys doing specifically to be able to ensure that it's not just a one-and-done game for everyone?
So there are a few key points here. One of them is we're having three kind of alternate versions of each main character, and there are three main characters and a sort of an auxiliary fourth within the game. So it might be a different accent or different character traits. So the second time you play through, you get a different version of the characters that you heard in the first time. So that's another reason to play through three times, essentially. There's also the procedural generated puzzling elements, which I spoke about. So each time you play the factory level, for instance, there'll be different blockades and that will present a challenge. There's also randomization as regards to the things that you might bump into. So within the desert, there are creatures wandering around, birds and such things, and they have patrol points which are randomized, and then their spawn location is also randomized. Oh, so you get essentially an emergent soundscape based on these random factors, and they're all within certain parameters to keep it perceptually realistic, but nonetheless it is sort of a fresh experience. Another thing we're doing is, because of the number of contributions we've had from voice actors within the city, every time you enter it, the market stall sellers will be laid out in different ways, so you're likely to hear different bits of voice acting. And then there are also the mini games within the arcade in the city. We're planning to do 4 or 5, and they'll only be small games, but nevertheless there'll be versions of as I say, Pong, maybe Space Invaders and that sort of thing,
all the classics.
And then we're also including the simulations, and one of them is in the city level already. And that's essentially ambisonic files, which is like an ambisonic file is, instead of having two channels left and right, it's like, imagine a ball of audio around your head, and you look around that ball in certain directions. So it's what they use for 3D videos, for instance, on YouTube, when you can around and the audio changes. That's done with ambisonic audio. So the simulations are a 5 ambisonic 3 to 5 minute simulations of different places. So the one in the demo, Raceway, we're going to have an alien sort of planet. We're going to have a Jurassic jungle.
That's pretty nifty. I couldn't get the simulator to work in the demo. I was walking at it and nothing was happening, so I just rage quit.
in that light, we're looking at adding a action or an interact button.
Yes. Oh god, that'd be great. I was smacking every button on my keyboard because I thought I was doing something wrong, and then I heard Liam do it. And I'm like, no, I guess you just walk at it, but I was doing it all wrong.
We're thinking of when you get within a certain distance of a place rather than trying to get someone to walk into it there'll be some form of cue. Maybe the guy will shout at you and you'll know that you have the press E.
Now, on a related note to that, a lot of people have complained about the lack of a compass. Will that be something that's in the main release?
Yeah, so we've discussed this. It's what we're trying to encourage is people to use the auditory focus.
Well, because there's pros and cons, because obviously people will be able to check their direction. But since this game is strictly based on you navigating in this audio landscape, it kind of makes it a little too easy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's about this immersion. What we want to is when you're in a in the middle of a city center and you shut your eyes, there are audio sources, you know, in front, behind, left and right, which you can use to tell which way you're facing. Yeah. So rather than using a compass, we're trying to build in to every level these beacons, if you like, with which you can orient yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Secondary to that, using the audio signposts, we're calling them, but people keep calling them beacons, so I think we're going to change it to that. We want players to make use of those so that they can create their own sort of audio map of the area that they're in, rather than relying on a compass. So it's something I'm hesitant to add in, but we're going to do a significant amount of playtesting, and it's a fairly easy mechanic to add should it turn out that we have to add it.
Really only two more questions I had, and we went on a sidetrack there with some of the parts of the game, but that's good because it was useful discussion. But I wanted to go, you already talked about this, and I'm surprised because I honestly thought the answer would be no, because that's just the way all audio games work. But you guys are planning on DLC content down the road and even sequels, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. What we're looking at doing is in a similar way to how Telltale Games did the Walking Dead series and other series in sort of 1 hour episodic chunks. We're looking at doing that to follow on from the story in this game, because we've developed such a lot of backstory for this city. We want to keep building within the same world we've created. Mm-hmm. And an episodic release, also from a business perspective, means you can do shorter releases, but promote more consistently.
Yeah.
And that way it's a bit to sustain a company. So there's an artistic reason, there's also a commercial reason to do that. So we're looking at either 4 monthly or 6 monthly releases. Assuming, of course, this game, that is viable.
So, yeah, that's always the issue, because we're such a niche market. That's not a lot of us.
Well, I mean the dream sounds really corny. The goal here is to prove that audio games are for everyone. They're inclusive.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's about inclusivity. It's not about saying this is just for blind people or this is just for sighted people. It's about this is a really cool thing. Everyone can play. Let's play it.
Yeah. Well, if you make it professional enough, which you guys are doing with this, because I think for a sighted person playing this, it is going to be based strictly on how immersive it can be. And because you're making that so immersible, then I think you may have a better chance at a crossover into the sighted world versus just the audio games world with blind people. So. We hope for the best, but there's really no way to know until you make it and then see if people like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
The stressful part about it. Now, the last question I had, and will the price of the game be around, I would assume, 17 to 20 pounds, whatever your guys' money is, based on the Kickstarter tiers?
Yes, yeah. We're looking at £20 on release, because A Hero's Call was $20 on release, and that's done very well within its niche. So that sort of guided us. And secondly, it's about this idea of it being a premium, like a professionally produced product. If you price it too low, people go in with the assumption that it's a bit of a plaything, it's quite disposable, and that's not the approach we're taking here. This is the as we say, it's meant to be the AAA of the audio game world.
Yeah.
I know we're a small indie company, but it's about sort of aesthetic as much as it is about the size of the team making it. So £20 seemed appropriate for that, and it also means that people who back the Kickstarter get it at a reduced price as a thank you for supporting us this early on.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know if you guys have any other £13 tiers left open? I know it's limited.
Yeah.
But you can get it for almost half off.
Absolutely. We have 25 left, apparently.
Oh, there you go.
Although, interestingly, our average backer price, I think it's 38, which is skewed slightly because we've had one £500 pledge, which is incredible.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, and two £200 ones as well, wow, which is just amazing.
That's crazy.
Is skewed, but even so, I think our average knocking those off is above the £13. And a lot of people have just gone for 17 just because they, I suppose, want to support a little bit more, which is also.
People will support something that they believe in. So, I mean, you're what, 70% there when we're recording this on Monday? I would assume it's definitely going to meet its goal, and then you're going to have to do some stretch goals after that because there's still quite a bit of time on it. Everyone sign up and make them do stretch goals.
For stretch goal, we've been thinking about this. Just out of, I know you're interviewing me, but if I can ask you.
Yeah.
One of the things we've been thinking about is one, porting to Nintendo Switch, because I know that has a lot of accessible games, or two, looking at doing a VR release of the game, which uses the head tracking rather than use the keyboard or the mouse to look around. What would you prefer, and what do you think of the people?
I'm not the best on mainstream games anymore. I've kind of taken myself out of that. I actually have enough sight to play a lot of them, but I choose not to because it's usually just more issue for me. But okay, the issue with something like VR, I know Illegally Sighted has a VR system, but the issue with that for a lot of blind people, it also comes to the case with Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch, where it's a large investment for a very small amount of return for what they're going to get. So I don't think a lot of people are going to have VR. I know one person with a Switch, but I don't know many other, but I might not be the best to ask. I might have to actually do some research on that, some polling or something. I don't know how many blind gamers are actually using. I would assume very, very small are using VR, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Nintendo Switch, I'm not sure. Yeah, I wouldn't be the best to ask on that.
We'll do a poll on our
Discord. Yeah, that'd be the best way. Assuming Discord's polls are accessible.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I really don't, but yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have for questions. And again, thank you very much for coming around and doing this interview. I know you don't have a lot of time with all this game development shenanigans, and I really do appreciate it.
Oh, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
And if you guys want to support them, you will find the link in the blog post for their Kickstarter. I would suggest going there. And if you are able, you can sign up for £13. So we'll get you the game at £13 instead of the £20, which will be the normal release price. After the £13 is filled up with 50 people, you can then sign up for £17 and still get it for a discount. I know not everyone is able to financially support something, and if you can't, just share it around. Maybe someone you share it to will be able to support the Kickstarter, and then by doing that, you're actually making this reality. And it's not very often we have a chance to get a game that has the potential to be this good, so we can make this reality by supporting this on Kickstarter. So if you can, sign up. If you can't, make sure you share it around. And if you're listening to this on the BSG blog, make sure you look down for a heading that's labeled giveaway, because there may be a giveaway for a copy of this game, Pitch Black, when it's released.